The first thing we need to do whenever we have two guests on at the same time is to try to get a feel for which voice belongs to whom. Catherine Albrecht is the founder and director of Caspian, the Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. She's also a Harvard PhD researcher. How's those doctoral studies going along, Catherine? Okay.
Hi, Ian. Well, you know, it's difficult to do both Harvard and be a full-time activist, but I'm managing to juggle them both, and hopefully I will actually have that doctorate by the end of this school year.
All right. Well, that's good. Thank you, and congratulations on all of that. Liz McIntyre is Caspian's communications director and the master strategist for many of the organization's most successful campaigns, and they have had quite a few so far. So congratulations, Liz McIntyre. Let's hear your voice.
Well, thanks, Ian. Yes, we have had quite a few successes, haven't we?
Okay. Well, I'm going to try and sort those out. So as we go along, we may ask you to identify which one's talking until we get a feel for it. You know, the last thing I think the major corporations and government that were interested in using RFID were hoping for would be the ire of a redhead. And there's few women as doggedly determined to stay on task as redheads. So, Catherine, congratulations on this work. And Liz McIntyre, you too. It's very, very interesting. And I almost don't know where to start except to explain about RFIDs. Again, for just people who didn't hear you on the last time you were on with George or are unfamiliar with the technology, it's very simple. It's paper thin. In fact, it can be as small as a period at the end of a sentence on a piece of paper, but they come in different forms. So Liz or Catherine, explain what a spy chip is.
Well, for listeners of Coast to Coast, they're probably a little more up on this technology than most folks, but if you haven't heard of RFID, I would say don't worry because you are in the majority. From the recent polls, it looks like only about a third to 40% of people have ever even heard of this technology, which is extraordinary considering how far advanced it is and how many hundreds of millions of dollars have already been invested in it. Essentially, there's a plan to put a tiny tracking device, a tiny radio frequency micro chip onto every physical product manufactured on planet Earth. And what this would do is the tiny microchip contains any amount of information. In the simplest case, it contains a serial number, a 96-bit serial number. For mathematicians in the crowd, 96 bits, you will know, is enough to uniquely number every item on Earth. And according to the developers of the technology, that's enough unique numbers to give everything a unique number for the next 1,000 years.
All right, now I want you to stop there, because when you say everything on planet Earth, people might think that's some sort of paranoid dream, but you actually have the memo.
Well, the idea here is to replace the barcode, and the people who have now adopted this technology or who have now inherited this whole project from the scientists and engineers who developed it at MIT back in 1999 is an organization called EPC Global. And to help you put that in perspective about numbering every object on planet Earth, they're the folks who manage the barcode. So they're in a perfect position to do this. They're already managing the barcode, which is on virtually every physical product manufactured for sale on Earth.
So they already have a model for this in the universal barcode. They already know that this can be done. The question is, do they take it up to the next level with these RFID chips? Now, I just before we get ahead of ourselves again, let's try to explain them for people if they can visualize them. Because some of them are visible. They'll put them on the back of a book at a bookstore so that you can't walk out with it, right? I mean, some of them they'll be right out front with. But others are much more surreptitiously placed. So people can try to imagine what these RFID tags look like.
Well,
Catherine?
You've got a tiny chip anywhere the size from literally the size of a speck of dust. Some of these are only 0.25 millimeters in size, so they're absolutely so tiny that you'd almost need a magnifying glass to see them. Some of the bigger chips are, you know, maybe the size of a speck of pepper, a little larger than that. The chip itself contains the information. Like I said, that can either be a 96-bit unique ID code, kind of like a social security number or a serial number for items, or it could contain other information that could be programmed into it. Now, the chip transmits that information by means of a tiny antenna. And the antenna, unlike, you know, it's not a sticking up radio antenna, it's actually a little flat metallic coil. It looks kind of like a maze or a racetrack running around it. The smallest of these things are chip antenna combinations are the ones that they're called the Hitachi Mu chip. They're incredibly small, but they have a very small read range. So in order to get this thing to transmit any sort of distance, you need the antenna to at least be the size of a dime, the size of a postage stamp, and in some cases they're, you know, 5-6 inches square. The way they transmit their information is a reader device in the environment sends out a pulse of electromagnetic energy, what you and I would call a radio wave. That electromagnetic energy is picked up by the antenna. It's used to power the chip just enough to stimulate it to say, here I am, and I'm unique chip number 308247, and any other information it's programmed to transmit.
All right, so, and there's kind of, again, just so we're clear, there's kind of really two different types of chips. There, you do have spy chips that would have their own power source, but they have to be larger in order for them to contain a little battery, as you say, that would they could transmit actively on their own, whereas these others are passive transmitters that are only transmitters when they are scanned. Essentially, I was kind of imagining it along with perhaps like a submarine's ping. You send out a ping, and if nothing hits it, it doesn't bounce back. But if it hits one of these RFID tags somewhere, it lets it know what it hit, and so
exactly.
the ping
yeah.
registers.
Exactly. The active form of RFID, and active and passive, I think, are somewhat misleading terms, because passive leads you to think that, hey, it's safe, there's nothing to worry about. But really all the word passive means is that it kind of waits, it sort of lies in wait in the items that you're wearing or
sure.
carrying, waiting for that signal from a reader in the environment. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you walk through a doorway, and the doorway is equipped with one of these RFID scanners that's sending out this ping of invisible radio waves. You could walk through that doorway unknowingly, and unbeknownst to you, you could be wearing and carrying RFID tags, you know, wedged in the sole of your shoe or woven into the seam of your clothing or slipped between the cover of your book. And when you walk through that doorway and that ping is sent out by the reader, every one of those individual little spy chips that you're wearing and carrying will all simultaneously send back their information. And it would essentially give someone who's operating that doorway reader a way to do an invisible frisk, or sort of a form of X-ray vision, to scan you and everything in your purse, your briefcase, your backpack, all the way down to the size and color of your underwear if you had a little tag woven into the seam of that.
And this would be fair to ask at some point, and we will, about who is reading them and then how that information could be bought, sold, used against you, pop up in your life. There are so many possibilities once that information is out there and nobody is expecting it, either A, for it to be read, or B, for it to be used. If nobody's expecting it, then we can't anticipate how it might even end up resurfacing in our life. So let's hold on that thought for a second and just go back to one other thing. At the very beginning, you said that only about a third of Americans were aware of these RFID tags, and you thought that was extraordinary considering how advanced this system has progressed. I wonder whether that isn't completely indicative of how little information the corporations that are behind this and or the government's interest is in raising awareness about this. They don't want us to know about these RFID tags because their research shows the more we know, the less we want them.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you one thing, Ian, I first learned about this technology. This is Catherine speaking.
Thank you.
When in 2002, I was actually researching an article I was writing for a law review, and it was on supermarket shopper carts. Some people may be familiar with me as the person who's led that campaign since 1999 to alert people not to use those cards and not to shop at stores that have them. But as I was researching that article, I ran across a very disturbing quote by a man named John Sturmer, who is a vice president for AC Nielsen, and they're the people who do the television ratings company. They rate your product acceptance and things like that. And what he, I'll paraphrase, but basically in this quote, he said, first there were barcodes that did a good job telling us what kinds of items were being sold. Then we had the frequent shopper card that told us who was buying those things. So that let us amass these big databases. But something else was missing, something more holistic that would fill in the information blind spots that we had. And he said, and he wrote this back in 2001, he said that new technology is on the horizon. It's RFID, and it will enable us not only to know who's buying what, but where and when they're using the products that they're buying.
Now, who gives them that right?
Well, that's the question. So I actually did some poking around, and I found out that this consortium that was created in 1999 behind closed doors from Procter & Gamble, Gillette, and the Barcode folks, together with the engineers at MIT, that they had been working behind closed doors since 1999 to perfect this technology, to get major corporations on board. And by the time I found them in 2002, they, and by the time they transferred their work over completely to the Barcode folks, they had over 100 of the world's biggest corporations on board. And I'm talking companies like Walmart, Home Depot, Coca-Cola, Kellogg's, Kraft, Nestle, all the big companies that we're familiar with have been working on this stuff in some cases as far back as 1999 and not telling us anything at all about it.
No. So, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, so I actually attended one of their meetings. I crashed one of their meetings back in early 2002, and literally I heard two things that made the hair stand up in the back of my neck and made me decide that I was going to devote my time to alerting the world. One of them, in this closed-door meeting, one member of the pharmaceutical community actually said, "Won't it be great when we'll know every time people take the lid off the toothpaste in their own bathroom?" And they had actually devised a way to do that, which we detail in our book, Spy Chips. The second thing they said was, when they realized that they were going to have a privacy problem on their hands, was they said, "You know what we really need is a Trojan horse." And this was an exact quote. "We need a Trojan horse so that this technology will essentially be everywhere before people realize it's there and decide to protest it."
Now, and this is the kind of their hope then of getting it sort of grandfathered in, as it were, so that you can't, won't be able to put the corporate genie back in the bottle on this one, or the spy genie, as it were. But tell me why it is that they want to know when we have the lids off our tubes of toothpaste. I mean, I get them wanting to track a can of Coke from the factory to the warehouse to the distribution point in the shopping center so they know where all their cans of Cokes are. I even get the idea of wanting to cut down on theft by having these items in a store so they can know when something's been purchased. But somehow in the back of my head, I don't know why I thought this, I just sort of maybe a sense of optimism or hope in human nature, thought that all those things got turned off the second I walked out of the store and I had paid for them rightfully, that they had no interest in finding out what I did with it after that.
Well, Ian, Liz here. Actually, the retailers do have a reason, some legitimate reasons for having the technology. So, you know, we do want to acknowledge that, but they wanted, for example, to streamline their supply chain operations.
Right.
And because of the way this technology works by radio waves, you know, just like the ones that your listeners are hearing us by, you know, these radio waves travel right through solid objects, you know, through walls, and so they can travel through, say, boxes in the supply chain, and the stores can inventory what's in those boxes without having to open them. They could walk into their warehouses and get an entire inventory in a fraction of the time. And, of course, they wouldn't need as many people to do inventory. And so there are some efficiencies that they could see because of the technology. And frankly, you know, those kinds of warehouse operations, that's fine. Keep them there, you know, that's fine. The problem is when they come out onto the sales floor. And you see, there's another agenda out there, not just this innocuous warehouse operation agenda. But they want to put one of these chips on every single product on the planet and put these products on store shelves so they can actually track people who wear, carry, and interact with those products. We have uncovered documentation of this intention, and, of course, we talk a lot about that in the book.
Yeah. But explain that then. Why? What possible motive could they have? Why do they care when I take the lid off the tube of toothpaste?
Well, you know, this is just furthering an agenda that's already underway out there. There are people called marketers who want to study consumer behavior because if they know everything there is to know about people, why they can figure out what motivates them to buy things, how they use products. And to take it even further, they love to be able to identify when those people are around, so that they could actually direct very specific advertising to them. If they know something about, say, their race, their sex, their history of buying things, they can develop some very targeted advertising, they hope, will get us to part with much more of our money.
Okay. But if this were all about targeted advertising, that wouldn't scare me. I mean, it would annoy me, right? It would make you feel like, oh, God, you know, how much easier can they make their jobs to take all the guesswork out of it? But if it were all about building a better tube of toothpaste or finding a more efficient way to sell me the brand that would be perfect for me, that wouldn't be nearly as scary as the possibilities of these spy chips, because it seems to me to have a much darker agenda than just selling me stuff in a way which cuts down on their legwork or mental energy.
Right. Well, the problem is this information that they're going to collect from people as they track them through retail spaces and even outside of retail spaces through these RFID tags, if in fact we allow their agenda to go forward that we've uncovered, if this happens, then this information is going to be in databases, and already our government is purchasing information from private retailers and mining that data.
The game is afoot then, and we will pick up right there. What happens once all this information has been gathered on us? What happens and who gets their hands on it? What other purposes could they be using that for? And what we can do to fight these spy chips? How major corporations and government plan to track your every move with RFID. Our guests are back next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. Interesting to hear that song, Elvis Presley right there, right, doing the lead vocal on A Little Less Conversation, kind of an obscure Elvis Presley tune from a soundtrack album, and it was modified, sampled, using new electronic tracks put together in England, and Elvis Presley, suddenly, you know, dead for decades, has a number one hit in England again with a song he never really recorded. He didn't record that song. He recorded another song, and it was manipulated into that song. But it just goes to show you, in a way, what's possible with technology and how things that we, you know, I mean, when Elvis was alive, he probably never could have thought that something like that would ever happen. That wasn't the paradigm. You know, maybe you get a number one hit, you know, on your when you died. Maybe they would release some song that came out, you know, maybe a year or two afterward, but not having hits decades later with brand new songs. But that just is a good reminder of the model for what we're talking about, the possibilities of these spy chips. How major corporations and government plan to track your every move with RFID. Now, I want to read you a part of this book and come back with our guests in just a second. It's about Bob. It's about Bob. Bob is careful to avoid being noticed as you exit your parked car. He jots down every detailed note, including your vehicle's make, model, color, and license plate number. This information will be critical to his mission. He grabs a shopping cart and follows you into the supermarket, keeping just the right distance, not too close. First turn, the fruit and vegetable aisle, Bob feigns an interest in peaches while you pick through the perfect bananas and place them in your shopping cart. He duly notes your selection in his inconspicuous mini notebook. Bananas, 2 pounds, cost 99 cents per pound. You head towards the bakery. Bob follows a few paces behind, noting that you pause at a Cinco de Mayo display and look over at the Mexican Bimbo bread. When you add a loaf to your shopping cart, Bob imagines that you could be Hispanic, though it's not clear from your outward appearance. Bimbo brand bread is a pretty good indicator that you have roots south of the border. He keeps his eyes peeled for other telltale signs as you roll down the cereal aisle. Since you add high-fiber cereal to your cart, Bob figures either A, you're health conscious, B, trying to lose weight, C, constipated. Bob rules out the first two options when you add Metamucil and some hemorrhoid suppositories to your cart, discreetly hiding them under a copy of the Sunday newspaper you picked up before heading to the health aides aisle. In anticipation of greeting the cheery checkout clerk, your cheeks burn, though you try to compose yourself. Bob pretends not to look and updates your profile. clearly embarrassed, pays cash, total $21.57. Bob pays for his bag of peaches, abandons his cart full of cereal and health aids near the checkout stand. He rushes to catch up with you to make last-minute notes, the way you walk, your clothing, any other details that could help Bob understand you, his prey. Your eyes meet Bob's as you glance behind you before backing out of your parking space. You smile, unaware of Bob's motives. You recognize him as that young guy from the store. Bob forces a smile in return, wondering how you'd feel if you really knew. Well, that was an experiment, an actual experiment that really happened with some would-be marketing executive students at Eastern Kentucky University. This is what they did for a marketing class. They followed people around. They made notes. Now, what if that very same thing happened all the time with spy chips? Noting what you did and why you did it. And then what if that information went beyond some guy named Bob? What if that information was compiled, filed, and sold on you every day, and you never knew about it? That's what Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre are trying to stop before it happens. Or is it already? We'll talk about that next. The book is Spy Chips. The authors, Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre, have joined us, and we're talking about the possibilities that both have yet to come to full fruition, which over 1,000 companies worldwide would like to see happen, and the reality of what is actually happening today and how this is being abused, or even worse, some of the ways in which it could actually come back to haunt us in a way which right now, fortunately, isn't happening. Is it? I mean, what's the worst that's happening right now, Catherine or Liz?
Well, actually, Ian, this is Catherine here. I have an undergraduate degree in international marketing, and my degree, I actually got it in the 1980s, back when marketing was a pretty straightforward business. It was what we used to call the four Ps, which is product, pricing, placement, and promotion. And the idea was you built the best product you could, you put the right price on it, you put it where people could find it, and you told them how good it was. Well, what's happened since then, unfortunately, to the profession of marketing, as you were describing there when you described this Bob who follows you around the store, is that marketing students now are being trained, instead of in those four Ps, they're really receiving espionage degrees. And we actually devote a whole chapter to digital Bob in the book, and how the Bobs of the world will become digital Bobs attached to the things you own, wear, and carry. And it will allow that Bob-like surveillance to occur long after you leave the store, when you get the item into your own home, when you're walking down the street, when you're walking in an amusement park, literally everywhere you go, marketers would like to be scanning you and the items you're wearing and carrying, determining whether you, for example, are carrying, oh, I don't know, a baby bottle or a diaper or something that indicates that you're a mother, so they can target you with products specific to babies or children or childcare. Or they might determine whether you're wearing a man's belt or carrying a man's wallet, in which case they might want to target you with shaving ads. So that's sort of the long-term view. It's a very natural extension in kind of a terrible way of what the marketers are already doing, which is spending billions of dollars every year to collect and traffic in our information so that they can do these sorts of things. So really we're training armies of espionage folks, and there's nothing they would like more than to get their hands on this RFID technology, because it would take what is actually quite challenging for them to do today and make it streamlined, easy, and most of all, invisible. And that's really their long-term goal.
As you quote Dick Cantwell, the Vice President of Global Business Management for Gillette, he looks forward to, quote, using readers to track consumer use of its products at home. So getting some of these scanners to go into the homes of people to find out what they're using. Gillette sees the technology engaged in direct consumer marketing, which would rely on personalized information obtained from readers installed where products are actually used, in your refrigerator. So is the hope there that you would voluntarily put one of these RFID tag readers in your home so that they don't even have to drive by in some, truck that says, Al's kitchen disposal service on the side with a big antenna on top. They don't have to go out and surreptitiously gather this. They don't have to use clandestine means. That you would volunteer them to scan your home every day?
Isn't that incredible? And, you know, the thing is, I don't think people really realize the threat model here. You know, we already know that we're being surveilled when we go out into public because we can see those surveillance cameras everywhere. But, you know, when you come home and you close the door at the end of the day, you lock the door, you are alone. And corporate America and the government and all the snoops out there can't watch what you do in your home. And I'll tell you, they want to tear down that barrier. And they're coming up with very creative ways to do it. There's a plan for a medicine cabinet that would go in your bathroom. This is an extension of what I heard about at that meeting I crashed back in 2002, where they wanted to be able to find out when you take the lid off your toothpaste. The idea here is to put an RFID reader device hooked up to the internet in your medicine cabinet. It would keep track of all of your prescription drugs. So when you picked up a bottle of prescription medication, it would identify you through something you are wearing or carrying, or we'll get to this later, injected in your flesh that would actually have you be a part of the system. And your medicine cap, your medicine bottle would have an RFID tag in it as well, so that it would send a little signal when you picked it up. It would send a little signal when you took the pill. Now, of course, if they've got the reader in there for that purpose, which their greatest hope is that the FDA would mandate something like that. So in order to get a prescription filled, you'd actually have to have a reader device monitoring your use of those prescription products in your home. And then, of course, once they've got that device in your bathroom, they can use it at that point to tell when you use Gillette razors or when you take the lid off the toothpaste.
Well, here's the part that takes it up to the next level. I mean, I think most people hearing that would really be bothered by it, and they wouldn't want anything to do with it. The trouble comes when nobody's asked our permission, and they're doing it anyway. And let's just say, if they can get these RFID tags on any of these products we're already using, why do we think they haven't figured out a way to put RFID transmitters on these products? You know, let's say that the pill has an RFID dot in it that we take, so they know when the pill is being consumed. Why do we think that they wouldn't bother to find a way to put an RFID reader that would bounce that signal someplace else in the bottom of the pill, you know, box that goes in back into the medicine cabinet? Well, why do we think they haven't done that yet?
Fortunately for now, the reader devices have to be hooked up to computers and to the internet.
Okay.
Now, there was a very disturbing news story just this week out that there's a new chip that's been developed that would turn electrical outlets into internet connections.
that's
where you really
What about start. Wi-Fi? Once Wi-Fi is everywhere, I mean, there are Google today, as I understand it in the news, is in negotiations with the city of San Francisco to provide free Wi-Fi to the entire city. Well, once an entire city is Wi-Fi'd, what's stopping that?
Right. So the real question is, how would you power it? How would you transmit the data? And if I had to bank on that happening, I think I'd probably bank on, you know, I mean, your coffee maker could, not that I know that this is happening, but it's conceivable, your coffee maker could surreptitiously contain an RFID reader that you wouldn't know about, plugging it into the outlet if it had one of these new chips in it that enables it, your electrical outlet, to serve as a broadband internet transmission pipeline. You actually could do something like that. So it's absolutely extraordinary. All of these technologies are beginning to converge. And, of course, where the real risk is that if we allow corporate America to place these RFID tags on, into, and around all of the things that we own, then, it's like populating the world with these transmission devices. All you need is one reader device strategically located to be able to scan that information that's all around it. So I think that's probably the back door, getting these into everything and then figuring out how to get the readers into people's homes.
Well,
and by the way, Ian, you mentioned Gillette. I know that some of your listeners may be familiar with this, but we've actually got a website up at boycottgillette.com that talks about a very specific abuse that Gillette did with this technology. And this is where Gillette had hidden RFID tags in the packages of Mach 3 razor products on shelves at the largest retailer in England, a store called Tesco, and also on shelves right here local to where I am in Brockton, Massachusetts. And what they had done was rig a hidden camera to take a close-up mugshot of every shopper's face as they picked the product up from the shelf. Snap, you got your picture taken. When you got to the check stand, they took a second picture of people. The idea here was assuming everyone was a shoplifter, They wanted a picture of every person picking up those products so that they could get an idea of who had actually paid for them afterwards. So if they took your picture at the shelf and then they didn't take your picture, they didn't see you pay for that item, they would print your picture out as a potential shoplifter.
Now, I have to say, I use Gillette safety razors, the old-fashioned razors that your parents would have used. I use those razors. Fine product. I'm pretty sure Gillette hasn't bothered to do that with it, 'cause like five of us that still use those in the United States. So I'm sure they're not investing RFID stuff on that. I did try the Mach 3 once. I couldn't get it out of Mach 1. I know they said it got all the way up to Mach 3, but I didn't nearly get it going that fast. And if you have Mach 3, do you really need Mach 3 Turbo? I mean, if you're really doing it that fast.
Well, now they've got the five-blade version. I mean, they're really going nuts with these things.
Right.
And that's the problem. These things are getting expensive, and they want to make sure that they're not stolen. But, you know, the concern that we have is that it's so easy to hide these things into products, and it's so easy to use it to trigger things like surveillance cameras. In fact, there was another case with Walmart in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, where Procter & Gamble and Walmart worked together on this one, and they hid RFID tags in a brand of women's lipstick called Lipfinity. This one, they had hooked up to a video webcam. So as women bent over to pick up these lipsticks, their images were broadcast live via a webcam to Procter & Gamble executives 750 miles away in their executive offices.
Now, why do they care to look at the women who are buying their lipstick?
Well, you know, the idea is it's hard to know. I mean, they came up with all sorts of excuses and said the reason they didn't tell anybody was because there was a sign on the door at Walmart that said these premises are under surveillance.
Okay.
That was noticed. But there, you know, you can find out who's buying the hot pink lipstick. We know we're selling a lot of it, but are we selling it to 40-year-old career women? Are we selling it to 16-year-old high school students? Who's buying it?
Well,
so now every time that hot pink is picked up, you can snap a picture, you can take a video, you can later go back and watch that video and see did she pick it up and turn it around and read the back? Did she pick up two different kinds before making a choice? All this kinds of information, which to us seems absolutely ludicrous that you'd want to collect it.
Well,
that's gold to these marketers. That's how they make their money.
And I'm bothered by that not because, I'm bothered by that just on that basis alone too, but you take that up to the next level. And what about the 50-year-old consumer named Earl who came in to buy that lipstick? And who's collecting the data on the products that are being used for purposes which some people might judge to be wrong? And so suddenly Earl, who just thinks he's copping some lipstick, he's going to go buy some. Now his name starts popping up on a database, and he was glad to be able to buy the lipstick and get out of the store with nobody from work, you know, no Joe Lunchbucket down the street noticing him buying lipstick. But then what about the RFID tag technology out there that also, when he walks down the street, shows that he's wearing women's underwear in that RFID reader? And who's going to start determining what to do with that information? Catherine?
Well, Ian, you raise a really important point. This is Catherine again. And, you know, I'm working on my doctorate in psychology and education at Harvard. Now, one of the things that I've studied and that's very interesting to me is the psychological impact of being constantly under surveillance. And, you know, it's my opinion, if Earl wants to buy lipstick, that's perfectly legal. There are plenty of things that we do in our own homes and in our own lives that really nobody has any business watching or observing us do. It's not that they're wrong. It's not that they're illegal. It's not that we're hurting anyone. It's just that perhaps it might be embarrassing, and you don't want your neighbor or the NBC film crew or the team from the National Security Agency watching you do it. And we're really creating a world where people will not have that psychological space to let their hair down and just relax. You know, the pressures of living in society so closely with others as we do are absolutely enormous. And the only thing that keeps us from going absolutely crazy is the fact that we know among our intimates, our family members, our friends, in our homes, we can let our hair down and be ourselves and engage in activities that other people aren't going to be judging us on.
You know,
all that runs the risk of going away.
As somebody who studied law, Catherine, tell me how you feel about a sign that just says that when you walk into a store, these premises are under surveillance, as being some sort of, you know, umbrella permission for them to track us even after we leave the store.
Well, and you know, that's the question. I think when you ask companies who owns that store, They'll say, oh, we do. You don't have a right to take a photograph. In fact, if try walking into a store with a video camera and saying, oh, I just want to videotape this store, the security staff will come over and ask you to leave. Or even taking a disposable camera and trying to take a photograph of the store. They view that as their environment where they can watch us. We've got a chapter in our book, Spy Chips, called The Retail Zoo, which actually talks about plans to turn stores into sort of bizarre exhibits where we're the exhibits, walking around being observed, filmed, photographed with hidden cameras and weight sensors and heat sensors tracking us, tracking devices in the grocery cart. I mean, stuff you wouldn't believe. It's all invisible. Tens of millions of dollars are being spent on this technology, and people don't know that it's there. So that's really, I think that's the problem. What gives them the right to do it? The fact that they can, the fact that people aren't outraged about it because people don't know about it. Well, and RFID makes it even easier to do it secretly. You know, they're putting RFID tags in shopping carts. Literally, when you walk into certain stores nowadays, they do record every move you make. It's like a little map, and they'll have a red line running around showing how long you paused in front of the wine display or in front of the pregnancy test kits. They know all of that. They record it, and when you identify yourself at the check stand, they link all that information up with your name. It's unbelievable, and it's all done through RFID.
Well, I want you to come back here in this next hour, and let's explore worst-case scenarios when it comes to RFID. I mean, if we had to think about, put our faith in these corporate executives to do the right thing and government to do the right thing, it could just all be fine. I don't like it, but, maybe if it were just, but that's, we just don't do that as humans. And once we get stuff, we want to play with it. We want to take, and I'm just really afraid of what people who don't have our best interests at heart have in mind with spy chips next on Coast to Coast AM. So we're talking about spy chips, how major corporations and government plan to track your every move with these radio frequency ID tags. Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre are the co-authors of this book, and it's word for word, chapter for chapter, one of the scariest reads you'll have if you are a privacy advocate. Maybe you aren't for everybody. Maybe you don't think about that too much for society. But just, your own privacy you thought you had control over. Wait till you hear what these corporations want from you and how they plan on getting it by not telling you that they are. And how they're really banking that Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre won't be able to pull off a counter RFID revolution. I mean, they got a lot of money riding on this, and they feel like it's their right to know everything about what you do with the product once you get it out of the store. And what would the government do with that information? What will criminals do with it once it's out there? Who's going to be in charge of keeping this information? I mean, the government can't even track the sexual predators, the sexual offenders that were registered in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, right? I mean, those guys are now blown like leaves all over the country, and nobody knows where they are. Well, does that mean we'll start using RFID tags on humans? I mean, to combat how, poorly the government can manage so many other things, do you go for a lowest common denominator, and everybody has to start getting RFID tags? What about an opt-in system? So people can choose to do that. What about one where they don't let you know the number of American soldiers who have RFID tags? Where could this all go? And does it inevitably bring us to that dark fear of so many Christians, the mark of the beast? We'll get to this all coming up with Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre on Coast to Coast AM. How much control do we have over our privacy? And just how bad and how deep could those abuses go? We'll talk about that in regard to these RFIDs, these radio frequency ID tags that are increasingly in everything we buy, in everything we consume, even when they don't have a tag on it, and Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre are the co-authors of the book Spy Chips, we should reiterate that there are lots of these tags that are clandestinely hidden on clothing, not in the actual, say, wash and wear instructions or anything like that, but just woven into the fabric of the clothes.
Yeah, Ian, in fact, last year we uncovered at a conference, an industry conference we attended, we found Calvin Klein clothing labels, Carter's baby clothing labels, Champion sportswear labels, all prototyped with RFID tags embedded directly into the label. And this is something that the average consumer would not be able to spot. We actually have photographs of that in our book, Spy Chips. And in fact, you know, earlier you were talking about sort of how these companies don't want us to get this information out. I mean, that's absolutely true. And that's what, one of the reasons why we're excited about this book is, even though it's about a technical topic, it's been compared to a technological thriller. The feedback we're getting on it is absolutely extraordinary, that it's very readable. It's a page turner. You know, before you turn around, you're halfway through the book and you're deeply into understanding this technology. And the reason I think for Coast to Coast listeners we're particularly excited about the book is because it's the kind of book you can buy and give to your aunt, you know, Ida.
Right.
She can sit down with it and read it and finally get on board with the rest of us who are saying, hang on, things aren't as they seem. There's a second agenda operating. You can give this to your lawmakers. You can give it to, you know, the guy in the next cubicle over. It's a very accessible book. You know, like I said, the feedback we've been getting on it is very good. You don't have to be technical, and you don't have to be particularly conspiracy-oriented to get right into it and really see the evidence.
Well,
and we've got hundreds of footnotes in there, so any, you know, even the most skeptical reader, I think by the end, is convinced that this stuff is very real.
Well, this is a conspiracy theory. It's the theory of the conspirators, however, that's really at work here. It's not you're trying to put it together based on little evidence over here, and we rub that against a little evidence over there to get a spark. You actually have the memos. You have the people. You have the things they've said in the places where they've said them that lay out the blueprint for this conspiracy. And
yeah,
it is one.
Yeah, the part you're getting to now, this is really the crux of the book, and this is all new information that we've never shared before. In fact, this is the sort of the premier announcement of some of this information is on this very radio program. The book is not officially released until Tuesday. We have reports in that it is in local bookstores. Of course, you can order it from Amazon.com. But this is essentially the debut of some information that now we're going to get into, which is really the juicy stuff.
Well,
talk about conspiracy theories. These companies have come up with that, you know, the outrageous plans in their own words. We have them dead to rights, outlining exactly what they intend to do through their patent documents.
Well, I want to go that way here, and we'll do it right now. But let me also ask you a quick question about the local bookstores.
Yeah.
If I went to my local bookstore and I bought a copy of Spy Chips, would it have an RFID tag in it when I go up to pay for it at the counter?
Fortunately, not yet, but that's on the drawing board. We actually have documentation from the Japanese Booksellers Association that they want to put RFID tags in reading material so that all of their surveillance equipment can watch people in bookstores and figure out how they browse, which books they pick up, which magazines they flip through long before they get to the check stand to actually make a purchase. They would be linking your interests with your identity. It, you know, literally as you're standing there browsing through the store. But it hasn't happened yet, fortunately.
I bought a book last week that had an RFID tag in it.
My guess is that what you may have found, I mean, and if you did, we want to see it.
Yeah.
Let me say that first of all. But a lot of times the anti-theft tags, and this is a huge danger, the anti-theft tags, which look a lot like RFID tags, they're flat, they have the little maze antenna running around.
Right.
They're called EAS, or electronic article surveillance tags. We've got a picture of them in the second chapter in the book to kind of alert people that they look similar. The problem is that you have no way of knowing whether the particular tag you've seen is an anti-theft tag, which simply communicates, hey, there's an item here that wasn't paid for, or whether it's an RFID tag that says, there's a book here, and it's called Spy Chips, and it was bought by Ian Punnett at a Walden Books at this date with this credit card. So that's really the problem, is that those reader devices in the doorway, when you walk in and out of the bookstore, they're being upgraded, we would say downgraded, I guess, but they're being upgraded in some cases to incorporate RFID readers. So you could be getting scanned simply by walking through one of those anti-theft portals on the way out, or even on the way in, and they could be, you know, electronically frisking you to figure out if you're carrying something that might help them identify you or make inferences about your purchase preferences.
Well, just so you know, I threw it out before I even got up to the counter. I just pulled it out of the book. I didn't even want it in there. And I went up to the counter, and I paid for it, and I walked out. And I hadn't thought about holding on to it until suddenly I read your book, and I wanted to go back and find out what kind of tag that was, because it looked different than the other foil tags that I've seen on items or in stores as, you know, theft-defeating items. So I want to go back and get it, but I could swear that I saw one. But maybe I'm just getting paranoid after reading the book. But it's not misplaced paranoia. This is the kind of healthy sort of, you know, fear that keeps you from getting burned. And that brings us to the new items of interest in the book. All right, let's debut some of the stuff that you have uncovered that is for the first time available in Spy Chips.
Well, sure, Ian. One thing, and you were talking about the worst-case scenario that we could possibly come up with. I mean, we've heard some really scandalous information when we've gone to meetings and we've combed lots of white papers, but really the patent applications and patents themselves are some of the most scary material you could ever read. And what's interesting is, as you brought up, the retailers and manufacturers who want to have this technology do not want consumers to know about it, or even know when it's there, and they certainly don't want them to know their intentions to use it to track people through stores and even outside of retail spaces. And the other thing is they've denied that it's even possible to do that. They keep saying, "Oh, the read range is so low on these tags, there's no way to possibly do it." Well, we've pretty much found information that proves that there's this other agenda and that it's very possible at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Well, again, even if a whole city goes Wi-Fi, at what point does that become a way to link up automatically to any of these? I mean, they're using a Wi-Fi radio signal, in effect, out to, you know, create a wireless web in a city. Why wouldn't that, how come that couldn't be turned around to be used for RFID tags?
Oh, it absolutely could. I mean, and that's going to enable what they call this Internet of Things. These manufacturers and retailers, we're talking big companies like Procter & Gamble, Gillette, Walmart, their plan is to have everyday objects with RFID tags on them that will enable them to talk to each other and even talk to retailers and manufacturers at any point where they are in the world, so they can be identified and tracked at any point.
All right. So let's talk about some of those government abuses. And what would happen? What are some of the ways in which you all have imagined this could backfire in the worst possible way for those of us who are concerned about our privacy?
Well, again, I think the patent documents speak to that so well. And we've uncovered one particularly frightening patent document from IBM. Of course, IBM, everyone knows IBM.
Right. I have an IBM laptop.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think IBM stands for I've been moved. but actually, Ian, it stands for I've been monitored, as we'll see. They have filed a patent application, and it's called Identification and Tracking of Persons Using RFID Tagged Items. Okay, not too subtle, huh?
Right. Pretty much, they didn't even give it a clever title that lets you wonder what it was really about. Nothing cryptic about that.
There you go. I mean, it's pretty obvious. And it gets more frightening as you read through it, because IBM details a way that they're planning to collect RFID tag numbers. Once these RFID tags are on every product in the world, you know, your shoes, your clothing, your backpacks, your credit cards, they want to collect these at the cash register and store these numbers in a database. And they love nothing more than to associate those with the individual customers who purchase those, so that later, when they see these tags, they can pull up their database and say, ah, that was purchased by, I don't know, Catherine Albrecht.
Right.
Right? And so they could possibly identify the exact person who's, say, walking through their doors. Or they could learn something about the person's gender. I mean, they've got this tag on them. They can tell, say, for example, it's on pantyhose. It's probably a woman, although not always, probably a woman.
What can they use? Other ways that they can use this kind of stuff. We talked about the insertion of into human flesh. Even beyond that, what other ways are do you see that this could actually become part of the human person? Where you might, as a woman or as a man, you might put one of these products in your body or on your body that you bought over the counter that ends up staying in your body or somewhere in your body over time.
Well, and that's what they're hoping for. And IBM's actually developed a device that would allow them to track these items in the retail environments and plenty of other places. They've called their device the Person Tracking Unit. And what this does is it zeroes in on RFID tag products and uses those items to watch people like a hawk.
Okay, so like, give us an example, like for women.
Okay. Well, let's say, for example, I purchase a pair of shoes, okay? And unbeknownst to me, there's an RFID tag embedded in the insole. And by the way, Ian, we have actually seen prototypes of these things. So they're very excited about the idea. Now, think about this. How often do you trade your shoes with someone else? Probably never, right?
Yeah, I was going to say not very. I mean, unless philosophically mean walking in somebody else's shoes. No, not usually. Other than the metaphor, I don't know.
Right, and probably just about every time you go into Walmart, you wear one or two types of shoes. I mean, I typically wear my sneakers when I'm going into a store, although I don't shop at Walmart anymore. But you know, if you're wearing the same shoes, so they get that tag number when you purchase those shoes at the checkout, and then every time they see those shoes in the environment, they can know, well, there's, say, Catherine Albrecht. And let's say that those are women's shoes, okay? Well, then they can figure that's a female, right?
Right.
And depending on the cost of those shoes, because that tag, you know, links to a database with all kinds of information about those shoes. And based on the price, they can determine, well, is this someone who has a lot of money or, you know, someone we really don't want to be bothered with, right? So they can tell a great deal about these tags.
But I'm more worried about this illustration in the book about areas within the female body that could accommodate what you call a deep organ implant. That's the patent application that I'm concerned about.
That's really, really scary. And that's the next generation of the Verichip as we see it, which right now, as you know, the Verichip is a little glass encapsulated RFID tag that's injected into your flesh, in your upper arm. But they're thinking, well, that's not deep enough, and wow, you know, people can dig those out. Perhaps you're kidnapped and someone can just rip that tag right out of your arm, cut it out with a knife. They want to plant those things much deeper where they'll never come out.
Now, why do you say they want to do that? How do we know they want to do it?
All right. We've got their patent. Yeah.
They applied for a patent, and they have to describe it in the patent.
Well, this is the part that's absolutely extraordinary, and I think it's why the industry is so afraid this book is coming out right now, is that, you know, Liz being the extraordinary investigator she is, and Liz, by the way, is a former bank examiner, so you want to talk about someone with incredible sleuthing skills. You know, she went into that patent office and must have spent literally thousands of hours in there, and she found patents for things that would just boggle your mind. I mean, one of these patents is the one you're talking about, Ian. This idea that you would take an RFID tag, encapsulate it in glass, and inject it into human beings so they essentially become inventory themselves. So now when you walk by the reader, instead of the reader knowing what's in your purse, your backpack, or the size of your underwear or your shoes, now they know who you are. And they can keep a record of every place you've been seen, every time you pass through a courthouse door, every time you, you know, walk through the portals of a Walmart. All of that could be logged and recorded in a database. And they would have literally a moment-by-moment view of every place you go and everything you do. Now, one of the patents that Liz found that is the extraordinary one you're talking about says, well, wait a minute. This Verichip implant, they put it currently between the elbow and the shoulder and the upper arm. It's a quick little injection process, so they say. It's relatively painless, although we have a picture of the injection device in our book, Spy Chips, which, you know, I don't think it looks painless, but okay. But their concern is that people could just remove that. So someone has patented a way to implant this inside the head, inside the lumen of the internal organs, inside a woman's, uterus, literally in a part of the body that if you were to try to remove it, one of the examples they gave is a runaway. you know, their goal is safe escape and escape from you know, parents and survival. They talk about the fact that, well, you know, if you were to try to gouge this out of yourself, you'd probably die. Therefore, you'll probably leave it inside yourself. And the really scary part is that this thing doesn't just send out an identification signal when it's queried like a Verichip, but they've actually patented a way that this thing would electroshock you. It could vibrate. It could even transmit your conversations remotely. And all of this is patented. And the important thing to realize about patents is that any inventor who files a patent has to sign a sworn statement saying that the thing that they've patented actually works, that it literally can do what they claim it can do. So someone out there has come up with a device that can be planted deep inside of an organ that can vibrate, electroshock, or transmit your conversations remotely. And now we start to get into the really scary applications of it.
Well, let's do that next then. That's U.S. patent application number 2004174258, by the way. And you get a diagram as well as an explanation of the internal organ chip that you can never remove. And it's, at least in its application form and its prototype form, it's already here. It's not being used yet. But how could these get used? And just how bad could it get? That's what Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre will lay out for us next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. If you ever doubt the investigative skills of our guests, Catherine Albrecht or Liz McIntyre, then go to page 153 of the book Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. Now, they certainly have the resume to support what they're doing, but it's the talent and the chutzpah that really makes it hit pay dirt here in the chapter entitled Adapt or Die, How RFID Backers Hope You Get On Board. On a lark, Liz typed the word confidential into the website search engine, figuring it would flash back no documents found. Instead, she gasped in amazement as the Auto ID Center's website, the electronic heart of the consortium that's been developing RFID, the group called Auto ID Center, delivered over 60 confidential documents, and were they ever scorchers? Clearly not meant for our eyes. On the Auto ID Center's own website, the insider presentations and reports detailed plans to pacify consumers and co-op public officials. There was even a private list of direct telephone numbers for some of the world's most powerful business executives, direct lines to the people who had funneled millions of dollars into the development of the spy chip. It was unbelievable. The very same people who had promised us that RFID data would be safe because, quote, internet security is very good, had given us a compelling demonstration of exactly the opposite and given us a close-up look at their dirty laundry in the process. As we read through the documents, it became clear that the Auto ID Center had problems that went well beyond their failure to secure their website. According to the studies, they had inadvertently made available to us a whopping 78% of consumers surveyed reacted negatively to RFID on privacy grounds, and, quote, more than half claimed to be extremely or very concerned about the technology. Getting people to accept RFID was not going to be easy. So, of course, their best method was not to tell us. It's to not bring us into the decision-making process of how much RFID we want in our life. And just how bad can it get? Well, we just started talking about the patents that have been applied for to be used with this RFID technology in the very near future. Body implants. And if you think they don't have data on that, then you haven't learned anything yet, because they back up everything in this book, Spy Chips, next on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about spy chips. That's what Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre have nicknamed RFID technology, which is coming everywhere in consumer applications. But what about government applications? We're hearing about these deep organ implants that could be done completely without your knowledge, or even with your knowledge. This is even very scary. I mean, there's lots of ways that people's arms can be twisted into having to have these things, but then they become the spy chip that can never be removed. And that's what we're talking about. Let's go as deep as we can into this area that you all have been working on. How much could the government get these into our bodies, and or how much would we allow them to put into our bodies? What do we know from the patent applications?
Well, the patent applications tell us, first of all, Ian, that there is an interest in doing this. There's an interest in doing this to keep captive populations captive. They actually talk about, there's another patent that we reveal in the people tracking chapter of our book, Spy Chips, that talks about Kevlar armbands. This is bulletproof fabric armbands that would would be strapped onto your wrist or onto your upper arm, actually, and would contain a tiny injection, a hypodermic module loaded with anesthetics that would literally knock you out. And the idea here is if you wanted to keep a population captive, you could put one of these armbands on everyone. You could then stimulate the armband if people got near the gates or the exits or certain off-limits areas to essentially deliver their payload and knock people senseless and unconscious, and they would fall helpless to the ground. Not only could they do this with keeping people captive by putting these in doorways or gates, but they could even activate them remotely. I mean, you can envision a point at which some evil dictator, they even talk about employees on corporate campuses being outfitted with these things. And you could envision someone, picking up a phone, literally dialing a number and transmitting the knockout information via a phone line and punishing someone remotely, causing them to fall to the ground. It's absolutely extraordinary.
Now, what would be the justification you think that they would be able to get somebody to have that, to say, look, if you want to work here, you have to have this in, and ultimately it's for your own protection? I mean, how do you sell that to somebody, that we've implanted something in you that potentially we can choose to knock you out with later on?
Well, the question is, how voluntary would it be? Because in this patent, they actually describe it as being something that would be put on captive populations. So those could be prisoners. The shocking part for us is when they talked about putting this on mentally ill people, putting them on the homeless. They talk about putting them on, people in enterprise corporate campuses. But they also talk about putting them on airplane passengers. So that literally, I guess the idea is when you get on the airplane, you'll be outfitted with one of these bulletproof armbands with a hypodermic needle in it, so that if you at any point try to get near the cabin, it would knock you out right there at the airplane. And, you really got to ask yourself, we're already being subjected to so much incredible amount of personal invasion to get on an airplane these days. You know, when I see people queuing up and standing in line and having all their belongings pawed through and everybody sort of obediently standing in line and showing all their ID and going through all the things that we go through today, what would it take for people to say, oh, okay, you want to put a knockout armband on me? I guess that's the price we pay for safety. And just standing in line and, bleeding like sheep as they put these things on us.
But I think that's the interesting angle, too, I want to go back to is what they would have to have a positive reason for why you would do that. And we know captive populations wouldn't have a right to opt in. But I just wonder whether they would say, look, security being what it is, we have to fight terrorism. And so this is the new way of doing it, is if everybody agrees to have this implanted, then you can get on the plane. If you can't, I'm sorry, you can't fly our airlines. But that way you, the consumer, know that this is a completely safe flight, that there's no way anybody could ever hijack it, because we have the way to disable that person immediately before they could ever get to the cockpit. That way some people would say, well, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to worry about. I'll go ahead and have the implant if that means keeping the bad guys out of the cockpit.
Well, and at that point, if it means keeping them out of the cockpit, why not just keep them off the streets and keep them out of your home and keep them – I mean, I could see that. That's definitely a slippery slope to the point at which, everyone would be outfitted with these. But, that's not the only method that they're talking about. You know, one of the things that I think is very scary, up until now we've really talked about marketing and business applications for this, and they're pretty scary, and we devote several chapters in the book just to helping people understand what the incentive is to put this everywhere. But the really scary part comes in when you start looking at what the government wants to do with this. Let me give you an example. The former Secretary of Health and Human Services in the Bush administration, the Bush cabinet, Tommy Thompson, former governor of Wisconsin, is within months of leaving, retiring from his government post, he took a position as a member of the board of directors of the Verichip human implant company. Now, this is not just some random government official. This was the highest-ranking medical official in this country. He is now sitting on that board of directors, and he recently did an interview with CBS MarketWatch where he said with a straight face, this is exciting new technology. We are, it's exciting to think about putting them into members of the military, literally injecting them. And, of course, I guess you'd face a court-martial if you said no in that case. And he also said, and this is the part that really chilled me, he said, we are working towards an electronic medical record for all Americans. And the way you would access your electronic medical record, which is basically all your medical record would be federalized and under federal control, is you would access it through a chip in your arm. So the idea is that this unique number would be implanted into your arm and encoded in this chip. And in order to receive medical services, you would have this little chip scanned. They would call up your little number. They would make the little log entry in your federal medical electronic medical record. The government would at that point be able to track all of your medical activities. They'd be able to, as we talked about earlier in the program, link that up with your prescription information. In fact, that little chip in your arm could be just the thing to signal your medicine cabinet to start tracking you when you go in there and you pick up the bottle of whatever it is you're taking off the shelf. Now, they're seriously talking about this.
And they're seriously talking about it because they're excited. This might mean, in their, as they're trying to sell this, that you would always be assured of taking the right dose of the right medicine. It would alert what? The doctors that you're not doing something right? I mean, they have to put some sort of sugar coat on this pill to get you to swallow it.
Well, and now you're getting into this voluntary piece. You know, they say, well, you got to do this to take the job. You've got to, you have to, whatever the restrictions are. I could see them going about it in much the same way as the supermarket loyalty card, which is where everybody's insurance could get a discount if you, quote unquote, voluntarily participate in the medication monitoring program. Let's imagine that suddenly insurance costs doubled unless you were willing to put one of these devices in your medicine cabinet and allow your HMO, public health officials, nurses, doctors, anyone who wanted to with it within that tight medical community to observe your use of medication. That's the justification that I see coming, is they'll say, hey, it's a discount. And then, of course, just like with the supermarket cards, it turns out not to be a discount. It turns out to be a surcharge for the people who don't participate. Because if you compare the before and after prices, the discount's about what you were getting before, but the people who don't capitulate, who don't go along with it, wind up paying through the nose.
Adapt or die. That reminds me of an episode of Law & Order. I know this is probably a couple of years old, so you all are well aware of it. But there was a particular episode where they were trying to track the movements of a murderer, and they were able to do that by using his automatic toll-paying card, his toll-pass card. And they could tell when he went through certain toll booths, and then that proved that he'd been at the scene of the crime, et cetera. And originally, they actually sort of talked about it a little bit in the show, that wasn't what that technology was meant for. It was just to make it easier to pay your tolls and not to have to slow down to do it. But since they already had the information, it was already there. It was just one, bench warrant away from being handed over to the police for them to, convict this person. Glad they convicted them, but it just goes to show you that if it's out there, some people will find a way to use it.
Well, Ian, you're right about that. This is Liz here. In fact, there have been several court cases already in real life, not just on TV shows, in which toll tag information has been used. In one case, in Illinois, a child custody case, one lawyer tried to establish that his client's wife wasn't spending enough time with the kids, so the divorce attorney subpoenaed her iPass toll records to show a pattern of working late. He said, well, you can't be at the toll booth and on the road late at night and be with the kids. So it's just a matter of time before this information is going to be used against people, and they don't even realize it.
Monitored wherever you go with spy chips, Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre's book goes for sale later on next week. But if you go on now, I'm sure you can advance order it from any of the internet locations that sell books. Just link up to them through Coast to Coast.
Actually, and I'm on Amazon right now, and it says if you order it now, you can have it one-day shipping. So Amazon's got it in, and in fact, they've got it in at a 34% discount.
Well, I would grab that right now then. Big Brother Gets Up Close and Personal is what it says on the back. And one of those things that people have often worried about, and in some ways, it, for some people, it's thought of as sort of a religious mythology, but from the book of Revelation, the idea of the mark of the beast, that you would not be able to do any commerce at all unless you had been tagged. And in this case, it was a prediction of a coming apocalypse. Where are you all with that? And is that, does that come up in your research at all?
This is Catherine speaking. That's a topic that's been of interest to me for many years now, and as I've shared with George's listeners in the past, you know, when I was 8 years old, my grandmother took me aside and warned me of a time when people would not be able to buy or sell unless they had the mark of the beast on their right hand or their forehead. And of course, that's referring to a passage in Revelation chapter 13 verses 16 through 18, and with your permission, I'd like to read those. It says, "And he causes," and he being the beast, "causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and captive, to receive a mark in their right hands or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell except he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, or 666. That passage refers to a time when essentially no one will be able to participate in commerce or in modern society without some form of numbered identification. And the thing that's truly extraordinary about this passage is that 2,000 years ago on the Isle of Patmos off of Greece, when John received this revelation, received the dream where this was revealed to him, it was really inconceivable that it would be possible not only to have a number to buy and sell, but even to identify every person on the planet. I mean, that's just, they didn't even know the limits of the physical world. Now we've mapped out the entire globe. According to National Geographic in a recent issue, they say we've now identified the last people on the planet, so there are no more uncontacted or unidentified people, even in the wilds of the Amazonian jungle. So we now have the ability to identify everyone. What the other thing that we have, and this has all come together in the last 15, 20, 30 years, we also have an internet and satellite communications that would enable any point on the globe, any place a sale takes place, whether it's deep in the jungle, out in the desert, or at the top of, you know, Mount Fuji, it's now possible using satellite communications and the wireless internet network to require every transaction to take place with a number. So the pieces to make this possible are coming together, and what makes it especially scary is that this VeriChip implant device, they've got a variation on it called the VeriPay. And it's essentially the same device that's injected in your body, contains a unique ID number. But that ID number is linked up in a database with your credit card information or your bank account information. So rather than using cash or even swiping a credit card, you would literally pass a body part in front of or under an RFID reader, which would capture that number, and voila, you'd make your transaction. So the idea that you would need a number to buy and sell that was somehow incorporated in a mark on your right hand or your forehead is actually now doable. Now, will the mark of the beast be RFID? I have no idea. We don't know that. But we do know that for the first time in history, this great mystery that some of the most brilliant minds of all time have pondered and contemplated and tried to understand is now technologically possible. And I'd say that's only within the last couple of years, perhaps even only within the last year, that all of the pieces have come together to make that possible.
It's a very interesting question, because it takes spy chips then in an entirely different direction. It says that it isn't just something which we have done, but somehow we were destined to do, which kind of freaks me out a little bit.
You don't have to be a Christian or believe in prophecy, I think, to find this stuff terrifying. But for those of us who are Christians, I think there's an added level of just astonishment and I think an added perception of just how dangerous this could become. Because, of course, at that point in time, you know, what the Bible talks about, the passage right before that says, and he had power to give life to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast could speak and cause anyone who would not worship the image to be killed. So, you know, this is talking about a point in time where there will be, you know, one leader over everything, you know, one world religion. And if you don't bow down low enough, or if you don't, you know, hand over your sovereignty to this one world leader or this religious leader, you'll be killed. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. And I, you know, Christians have been fearing this time for thousands of years and fruitlessly trying to understand it before the time was right. But I think we're actually coming to the time where people could understand. Yes, you know, we're seeing the globalization of the currency in Europe. We're seeing increasing globalization of commerce. We're seeing just yesterday I was reading about.
I'm afraid we're coming out of, running out of time for this hour, but we can come back to that thought. I just don't want to be late for the break, and because we're going to open up the phone lines too for just a second. So let's just sum that up by saying, hard to imagine that the beast is Tommy Thompson, but or that somehow I would have imagined that the beast would have looked better in a suit. Anyway, but whatever the case is, it's something to ponder about spy chips, how major corporations and government plan to track your every move with RFID. More with Catherine and Liz and you next on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about spy chips and how they could be abused. Let me just ask you all, both as women, as citizens, and knowing that, you know, the government has done a pretty poor job of tracking, say, the sexual predators of New Orleans in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. Why wouldn't we, for safety reasons, want to see spy chips used for some criminals, these people who are the most dangerous, so that we can always know where they are and not rely on some sort of honor system for them to check in with the local governments like they're supposed to?
Well, let's think about government control here for a minute. Would you want China to have access to this technology to keep tabs on its citizens, or North Korea to have access to this technology to keep tabs on its citizens? I mean, the real question is, how much do you trust your government? And, you know, this is the most powerful surveillance technology ever devised. It is absolutely life-changingly, earth-shatteringly new. I mean, this, we open our book Spy Chips with a quote that this will be as much of a change to the world as the invention of the light bulb. I mean, that's the level of dramatic we're talking about. So a tool of that power to surveil, track, monitor, and watch people, you know, you got to really think carefully about whose hands you want to put that in.
Well, I grant you that, but go with that example for a second, though. I mean, I'm with you, but I mean, there's lots of scary stuff, bullets, guns. I mean, there's lots of things we wouldn't want to be in the wrong hands. But suddenly, when you're being held up, you know, at gunpoint on the street, it's nice when an armed police officer shows up with a bigger weapon than the person that's pointing one at you. And suddenly, at times like that, well, then that seems like, you know, that's the best possible outcome of this. So, I mean, why not use that for people who are, say, you know, level three sex offenders?
Well, level three sex offenders are one thing. I think we would all agree that society needs to keep watching them. I think the bigger question, though, is who a government designates as its enemies. You know, if you look at Red China, if you look at Stalin's Soviet Union, you know, people seem to believe that being surveilled will somehow keep us safer, and the government certainly wants us to believe that. But if that were true, let's look at the most surveilled population probably in history, or at least during the 20th century, and that was the Soviet people under Stalin and the KGB era that came after it. You know, during that period of time, if you lived in the Soviet Union, your phone calls could be listened to, your mail could be intercepted, your neighbors could come over and, you know, be KGB spies trying to assess your loyalty to the state. People could be put in jail for saying a critical word against their government. These folks were watched from morning till night. Were they safer? Well, they may have been safer from petty street crimes. They may have been safer from, you know, the incidental crimes that occur in society. But overall, that was the most deadly regime of the 20th century. Stalin's government killed 60 million of its own citizens. And the way they were able to do that was they were able to watch and observe and keep track of who resisted this oppressive hand of the police state, who took the time to organize and speak out against it, and they ruthlessly annihilated those people. So the problem is when you put, even if you trust our current government completely, and they have the best of intentions to protect us against criminals and terrorists, if we put these tools into their hands, if we willingly allow our every belonging and even ourselves to be tagged, tracked, and monitored by the government, all it takes is for someone else to grasp those reins of power. You know, it's like putting a noose around your own neck and hoping the guy on the other end of it doesn't pull it. And I've got to say, you know, I, for one, don't want a noose around my neck, even, as we say in the book, if it's Mother Teresa on the other end. Because at some point, Mother Teresa may pass on, and you may be looking into the eyes of Adolf Hitler holding that rope you put around your own neck.
Well, and there were a few nuns that my wife knew in Catholic school growing up that she wouldn't have trusted with a noose around her neck even there. But all right, then one other question, and we'll take the break and come back and get all the callers that are being lined up right now, and that's this. In my dollar bill that I'm holding up right now, there's that little strip that goes right down through the middle of it. And we've all done that bar trick where you can take that little silver strip out, or in some of the new dollar bills, I think that's even being hidden even better than that. In light of the threads that are being woven into fabric, or the patent that they have on the technology that can do that, what could happen with even our paper money when it comes to being tracked with RFID tags?
Well, Ian, this is Liz here. Yes, actually, there is talk about one day putting RFID tags into money, and there is already the perfect chip for it called the Mu chip. The Japanese government has talked about putting them in high-denomination yen bills, and the European Union is talking about putting them in their money. And these are, you can't even see them. As far as we know, though, the cash in the U.S. right now does not have RFID in there, but it's possible one day it could. And already it has just a magnetic property that allows the government to tell what kind of denomination there is when it's up close in a sorting machine. It tells what country the denomination is from. But I know there was a hoax a couple of years ago about $20 bills having RFID tags in them. I don't know. Did you see that, Ian?
Yeah, I did. I actually went to Snopes.com, and I just typed in RFID to see what would pop up, and that was one of them.
Right, and that was a hoax. But I will tell you, there's a reason for that probably to burn up like it did. The government, I found in my research, is buying an awful lot of magnetic ink, and I would imagine that would definitely burn up real good in a microwave oven.
But they're probably not buying all that magnetic ink just to make it easier to hang our money on our fridges.
Probably not.
It's time for this break. We'll come back. We'll line everybody up. We'll start taking your calls. You join the conversation next with Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre of Spy Chips next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Spy chips is the topic of conversation for the rest of this hour. We'll hear your perspectives on this and your questions. We'll start east of the Rockies, where JC is talking with Catherine and Liz. Go ahead, JC.
Good morning. I'm calling you from Texarkana, Texas, and Texarkana, Arkansas area. Big Brother's listening. You may want to give me information.
They already knew that. They already got that information. They already knew that about
you. Well, they could confiscate you all's telephone records and find out where we're calling from.
Probably
come right
could.
To our homes. What I want to get to is something that you all barely touched on a while ago that Art Bell talked about at length for several hours with a man, with the president of the American Radio Relay League, the ham operators, about
right.
BPL, broadband power lines, which will couple with RFID to help do us in. Broadband power lines, for those who don't know, is the feeding of the Internet over the electrical lines of our home, and all we have to do is plug into an electrical outlet with a special modem to get the Internet. But the trouble is they can pull information out of our home, like LG refrigerator, I understand, has a chip in it that can inventory what's in our refrigerator.
Right.
So it's a double-edged sword. It brings information home and brings information out.
Well, what we talked about that earlier. Do you have a question for our guests?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I want to give you some information that y'all can research, that a company that is researching this. Texas already passed a law making it lawful for companies to get into this. But are you all going to do you know anything about BPL being marketed in Cincinnati, Ohio? It's in a Hyde Park area. I talked with the company itself, Current right. Communications, which is contracted with Synergy Electric to sell BPL. And I hope you all go in there and do some negative marketing.
Let's find out about that. Go ahead.
Thanks for bringing this up, because it's really an important point. You know, we talked about it a little earlier. Yes, there are trials going on actually in various cities throughout the world about BPL, which, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's broadband over power lines. It's the idea that you could use the wiring that's already in our homes to transmit Internet information directly through those outlets. But let me tell you, there's something I think even more frightening than the BPL, which requires a modem, and that's this new chip that Matsushita just unveiled. And let me just read a news story from actually Friday, September 30th, so just 2 days ago. The common household electric socket will serve as your home's connection to broadband. This will be possible because of a new chip developed by Matsushita Electric Industrial Company. It does away with all the Ethernet cables and hassles of hooking up to a wireless network device. Just plug into the power outlet and surf the web. Products are being developed, but gadgets embedded with the chip from the Japanese manufacturer of Panasonic products can hook up to a broadband network by plugging into the common electrical outlet, because the Osaka-based company has come up with technology to use electric wiring in the home to relay not just electricity, but also data. So this gets into what we were talking about earlier.
Right.
They want access to your home. You know, we talked about you come home, you close the door, you breathe a sigh of relief, you're out of the surveillance grid. Well, if they have their way, it not for long. They would like to be able to have monitoring devices in your homes. In fact, with RFID, you know, and again, Ian, just as you were talking about, this is all for our safety. It's all for our own good. One clothing manufacturer has come up with a pair of pajamas where children's pajamas would be embedded with RFID tags to keep them from being abducted. Now, for this to work, though, you have to put RFID reader devices in your home, in the doorways, so that every time somebody passes through the doorway, ADT is watching. Now, ADT is an interesting company. That's the security company with wiring in people's homes already, but they're not watching you yet. If you allow them to put this kind of stuff in your house, ADT's parent company is Tyco. And Tyco is sort of like, it's like one of the Enron bad boys of the accounting world. This company is absolutely scandalously corrupt. These guys at Tyco are deeply, deeply embroiled in the whole RFID surveillance, the development of this surveillance network. And they would love nothing more than to have you voluntarily pay them money to put RFID reader devices in your home and to put these RFID tags on your family members. So it all kind of ties in. And if they can do this over power lines, all the better. No one has to come in and install anything. You just plug in their little over-the-counter device into the electrical outlet in your bathroom or your kid's bedroom, and voila, instant tracking of everybody in the house.
It's one-stop shopping for them, not for us. It's
Absolutely.
Sue west of the Rockies for Catherine and Liz of Spy
Hello.
Chips. Sue?
Good evening. Just two quick things. Is your book going to be available to blind folks, and how can we stop this?
Sue, what a great idea. We would talk to our publisher, Nelson Curran, about that. In fact, I'll be in touch with them about that early in the week, and we'll ask them. I know that they've done that in the past, so we can see if we can get our book either out on tape or out in Braille. As far as the book being available, I want to point out to people it's officially released on Tuesday, but you can get an advanced copy if you order it through Amazon.com. It's available now for a discount. I think it's $16-something instead of $25, which is its regular price. So I would encourage people, if you order it now, they're telling you that they can do overnight shipping. And it will also be in bookstores on Tuesday. And again, the word is, the name of the book is Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. You don't have to remember that mouthful. If you just remember Spy Chips, And it's one word. I actually called up my local Barnes & Noble and asked for spy chips, and they were looking for it as two words, and they couldn't find it.
They couldn't look for it.
Be sure you ask for it that way.
Well,
and as far as how to fight back, if I could answer Sue's question there.
That's where we're at.
Two things we can do. We don't want this book to be depressing and leave people feeling hopeless. We've been fighting the good fight out there in the trenches against RFID for the last couple of years, and we've had extraordinary success. Here's the secret that these spy chippers don't want us to know. 78% of people oppose this technology according to their own confidential internal studies that we obtained. People hate this stuff. Now, they're going to want to tell us through the media and through every outlet they can that everybody loves it, and if you don't like it, you're the only one, and get with the program. But what they're really hoping that we don't figure out is that everybody else hates it too, and they really hope we don't band together and speak up. But, you know, we have done boycotts against the companies that have implemented this. In every case, we've gotten them to stop. We got them to pull that horrible Gillette photo-taking shelf.
Right.
That was pulled within 24 hours of that being revealed in a major newspaper. We got them to pull plans to put RFID tags in women's underwear. There was a company called Benetton, an Italian company that sells clothing in 130 countries. We were able, within days of launching the Boycott Benetton website, to get them to stop their plans to do that. So we consumers have extraordinary power. We've dedicated the last chapter of our book. It's called Pull the Plug, and it is a whole listing of things that you can do, whether you've got a lot of time or just a little time. There's something for everybody there, whether you want to jump, you know, put your little toe in the pool or jump in full force. And those of you in the Dallas, Texas area, Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, we actually have a protest planned of a Walmart store. In just 2 weeks, on October 15th, we will be protesting. They're actually selling RFID-tagged products in the store right now, and we're going to stand outside that store and tell them they need to stop. And believe me, the whole world watches Walmart. All the other retailers, if Walmart gets protested, everybody's going to say, whoa. If they can't get away with it, we certainly won't be able to.
Well, and I think people will be interested in stopping that in their local Walmart as well. Let's go to Roger, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM for Catherine and Liz. Go ahead, Roger.
Hi, Ian. Hi, ladies. Hi. I was wondering, nobody's really touched on this, but in today's society where a college student can build a nuclear bomb from plans on the Internet, what's to stop criminals from being able to build these readers from parts they buy at Radio Shack and then being able to instantly scope houses for jewelry, cash, women who live alone, depending on what their tastes go to?
Well, Roger, this is Liz here, and that's a really good question. There's really nothing stopping them from doing that. And, in fact, there's a professor at a university in Illinois who's already thought about this potential and how criminals will want to stalk people and possibly even share information about people. I mean, this would be the ideal situation for somebody who, say, wants to terrorize a particular woman or make sure, she is followed everywhere to be sure she's in line with whatever her boyfriend or husband, you know, her jilted lover wants. And it's called rftracker.com. And this is right now just a view of the potential future. But at this site, he talks about how people who have these reader devices in the environment can send in information about the tags they've seen and upload them to a database so everybody can share in the information and follow around the people they want to follow. It's a pretty scary scenario, but one that obviously is very possible.
And that's just the beginning of the potential criminal use of that information, too. I like the way you all talk about in the book about a criminal just being able to walk down the street with an RFID tag reader and just scan your boxes as you go past, just even that much, to find out how much money you have, to see whether you'd be a good mark or do they move on to the next person. Let's go to Karen on the wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM for Catherine and Liz. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, hi. I had a couple of questions of my recently acquired passport that I'm a little worried about. After hearing about how you'd suggest if somebody wanted to get their passport in without a chip, I actually had it overnighted, all the documents, 4 days before September 1st. And, of course, I got it back well after September 1st, but I expedited it. And I'm wondering, my friend called and they said, oh, yeah, they started doing that in the beginning of 2005. And I called the same passport office, you know, try to tell if mine might have a chip. And the guy said, oh, no, they're only doing that with government officials. there's no set date where they're going to put the chip in your passport. So my questions are, is there some way I can tell that my passport got under the line and didn't get the chip? And can a tri-field meter that checks radio waves be able to tell me if it has it in it?
Well, let's leave that answer for after the break so that we make sure we have time for Catherine and Liz. Hate to hold you in suspense like that, Karen, but those are just the questions we'll pick up with in just a moment. And also everybody else who's waiting online, and there are a ton of them, for Catherine and Liz of Spy Chips. Next on Coast to Coast AM, I'm Ian Punnett. In fact, I believe the Twin Cities is also the corporate headquarters for Gillette, isn't it? Catherine and Liz, am I wrong on that?
I think Gillette's actually based outside of Boston.
Oh,
I drive by one of their big Gillette Central factories there periodically, and I always shake my fist at them when I do.
The question that was left, though, with Karen before the break was about her passport, which she had expedited to her, and she was concerned about a spy chip in that. I hadn't heard anything about these. What do you know about them?
Well, Karen's absolutely right in that the U.S. State Department is going to be putting RFID tags in our passports. They are not doing it yet as far as we are aware. Right now, they're putting them in the passports experimentally of United Airline employees, people who travel frequently, both pilots and stewardesses. There are plans to put them in our passports. They've already been approved. The money's been allocated. In fact, Karen probably paid an extra security fee I think it's just over $10 extra to pay for the RFID tag system. But as far as we know, they're not going to be put in passports until the beginning of next year at the earliest for regular folks. So I would recommend anyone who needs to renew their passport, do it now. Don't hold off because you'll probably be able to get a spy chip free one.
And what would it mean? I mean, let's just explore that possibility of having one of those in a passport.
Well, imagine that anyone with the RFID reader, which would include third world governments and any other governments for that matter, and even criminals who could hack the technology, would be able to identify you as an American when you travel abroad. And, you know, our country's policies are not popular everywhere on the globe, and it would make it possible for people to pinpoint Americans for kidnapping, for muggings, and potentially even for assassination at a distance, because that's how, you know, you can read these things in people's pockets without them even taking, you know, them out. If you could have it tucked in your backpack, you could have it deep in your fanny pack, and someone could read that from, you know, a distance by simply silently scanning a crowd, picking out the American.
Well,
horrible idea.
I was in France a little over a year ago, and I remember one of the local guides said, if you're ever in a sticky situation, just say you're from Canada, that French people generally can't tell the difference between Americans and Canadians.
Well, there you go, and that won't be possible.
That wouldn't be possible.
The sticky situation people will scan you and know where you're from.
No matter how many times you make references to hockey. Tara has a question on the wildcard line for Catherine and Liz on Coast to Coast AM. Tara?
Yes. Hi, good morning. This is an excellent show, and thank you, ladies. Keep up the good work. I also appreciate, Ian, your putting out there, you know, what the government will say to us, what we must protect ourselves from the sex offenders. However, that's an iffy situation because calling from New York City, we had some young black men under the Central Park case. When one got out, they served their time and they couldn't settle in a certain neighborhood. And shortly after that, their innocence came out. And then we have a New Orleans department that's even more corrupt than New York City. Now, my question is, first of all, the Katrina survivors, the aftermath of it really, have strange wristbands on their wrists. And I want to know if the ladies know about these wristbands and whether they have the RFID, because they're definitely, you know, restricted to their movements. They're not getting vouchers to go with support of family, et cetera. And the last part of the question is nanotechnology. Coase has had some guests on that. The technology is so astounding. It sounds like when they combine that with RFID that they'll literally be able to put them in us without our knowing. And I'll listen to the air. And thank you so much for the program, Ian.
Thank you. That's very interesting, kind words. Go ahead.
Hi, Tara. That was a very good question. No, we aren't aware about the Katrina wristband situation, but our government has, in fact, used RFID laced wristbands to control people before, and we have evidence that they will plan to do it again that we outline in our book. So it's possible that if you saw wristbands on people and they were in a controlled situation, that they were being monitored through those bands. As far as nanotechnology, you're right, that is a very frightening scenario, and it is very possible to put RFID in things that we might ingest. So, yeah, absolutely.
But this is
Catherine here. I'd have to point out that there actually are plans to put RFID tags on the non-edible parts of fruits and vegetables. Food is something they're very interested in tagging and tracking. There's discussions of having our medicine cabinets, or excuse me, our refrigerators and our pantries hooked up to the Internet so they can monitor what you have on the shelf in the case of a recall. So, you know, they recall those cans of peas, and they'll instantly know every home that contains them. Of course, they'll also know everything else in your house all the time.
That's that Trojan horse we talked about, too, in a way. It's give them something innocuous, something that somebody would feel good about. But there's a dark motive there, that Trojan horse you talked about at the beginning of the show. Get people to accept it on this premise, you know, beware of Greeks bearing gifts, that we're going to suddenly have, you know, all of these other portals open to people that we don't even anticipate.
Right. And yeah. Ian, I want to answer something else that Tara brought up about ingestible chips. If a chip was small enough to ingest, it wouldn't have a big enough antenna to really be read at any kind of a distance. So it would be difficult to track somebody through something like that. They'd probably go for more the injectable models that are much larger.
And again, I hate to keep going back to this if it's wrong, but doesn't Wi-Fi change all of that? That it isn't a matter of how far away somebody is going to be from some device to pick it up, but rather if there's an umbrella over an entire community of Wi-Fi, it just changes everything.
Well, what the Wi-Fi would enable is it would let you put these reader devices all over the place and have the reader devices communicating through the Wi-Fi. So the reader device wouldn't actually need to be physically wired. Give an example. You could take a Wi-Fi reader device and hook it up with, you know, to a battery pack and stick it in a landscape boulder and you know, in a park or in the woods even. And somebody walking past that could be scanned, and that information could be sent without, you know, provided that you're within range of the Wi-Fi network, you could be transmitting information that way.
The calls are just coming in left and right, and we won't have time for all of them, so we hope, too, that you'll get in touch with Catherine and Liz and communicate with them. We'll tell you more about how you can also send emails to us on this. Spy chips, how major corporations and government plan to track your every move with RFID. We'll take the rest of the calls that we can coming up next. Let's get to as many as we can east of the Rockies for Catherine and Liz of Spy Chips. Greg on Coast to Coast AM. Greg?
Yeah, good morning. Okay, Mike, I have the chips. They're called quartz diodes technology. I have them in my ears. I was a security specialist for a long time. But the thing is, no, it's not funny. They do cause health problems, ear infections, throat problems, this and that.
Well, we weren't
My
laughing.
Question is, how do you get rid of them? I told my boss I don't want them no more, and nobody's gotten a hold of me about that, you know.
Well, how do you get rid of them?
Well, Greg, this is Liz here. That's a good question. We've never heard of that before, having these diodes in your ears. Have you talked to your doctor about that?
Yeah, but someone would call the doctor and just say, leave them in for a while, you know. But they've seen them. My doctor has verified that they're in there.
Well, I tell you, I'd like you to get in touch with us, email us, because I'd like to talk to you more about that. I really don't have an easy answer for you.
Well, how would somebody get in touch with you if they wanted to pass along their experiences, whether they have something like that they'd like to contribute?
Well, I'd love to hear about it. You can go to our website, spychips.com, and there's contact information there on how to get in touch with us. We have a way you can sign up for the newsletter and send us feedback, and any of those methods will get that information to us.
Mike is hanging on Coast to Coast AM for Catherine and Liz. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. I believe I speak for a lot of people when I say that you two girls are national and international sweethearts for doing this. We really appreciate this. My question is this. Is there a process by which we can render those devices useless? I know in the case of people who are on the mission field, they will use tasers to treat a snake bite, and it will virtually nullify the venom, and I figure these things have to deal somewhat with electronics. So can you comment on that?
Great question, Mike, and thank you for the compliment. We've actually done a lot of work, and it's nice to get that kind of appreciation. So
then it raises your babe factor. How about that?
Yeah. Well, let me talk about disabling the chips, because that's, of course, the first thing everybody wants to know when they hear that these are going to be out there. We detail in our book, Spy Chips, we've got a chapter in there that opens with Liz and me rather hilariously trying to kill these chips in our microwave. And what we discovered very quickly is that they catch fire if you expose them to microwaves or any strong form of electromagnetic radiation. It does kill the chip, but it also runs the risk of bursting them into flames. It is possible with a taser also, we've heard, although we haven't tried it, to kill a tag, but our concern would be the same, that with that amount of sort of overloading the chip with too much energy, that it might also catch fire and flame and put you at risk and also destroy the item that it's in. Short answer to your question.
No, I think that's a really interesting answer. There's something for people to keep in mind. I hadn't heard that story about tasers and snake bites, too. Did I understand him right when he said that?
I think he did. I hadn't heard that either. Good to know, I guess, if you have both a taser and a snake bite at the same time.
That's really cool. First-time caller line, Robert on Coast to Coast AM. Robert?
Yes, Ian. How you doing tonight? Thank you very much for taking my call. Ladies, you guys are doing a super job.
Well, thank you.
Very informative program tonight. I'm a truck driver out of Escanaba, Michigan, in Montana. But my biggest question is, have you gone ahead and contacted any of, like, the national media, Fox News? Is there any way we can go ahead and work it so we can get you on?
To keep raising their profile as defenders against the spy chip technology? Yeah, I think that's a great question. But you couldn't be more...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said they couldn't be more telegenic, so I'm surprised that y'all aren't on TV more than you are then.
Well, we've done some TV, but I'll tell you, if every listener listening to this program went on Amazon.com or went into their local bookstore and bought this book and we could get it on the bestseller list, that's something that nobody can ignore. You know, these big companies are big advertisers, and they pay a lot of money to a lot of media outlets to advertise their products, and that gives them a lot of pressure to be able to apply. But if the media outlets can say, hey, wait a minute, you can't pressure me, advertisers. This is a bestseller. We have to talk about it. At that point, there will be no excuse to keep us off of those programs and out of the media. So we really, if there's one thing we could ask you to do, we don't ask for donations. We've never taken money for what we do other than, you know, very, very small contributions. We've never drawn a salary. I personally have poured in tens of thousands of dollars of my own money into this fight, so I'm not asking this for myself. But the best thing you can do to get the word out is go into your bookstore, call up your Barnes & Noble, your Borders, your Walden Books, and say, please carry this book, Spy Chips. I want a copy for myself. I want 5 copies to give out as Christmas presents. If we can get this thing on the bestseller list, I'm telling you, nobody will be able to ignore it, and the whole world will know what's going on.
We'll go back to the phones in just a second, but we were just talking during the break about movies where this type of technology has popped up. One of which is a movie called The Island with Ewan McGregor. Have you ever seen that?
I'm not familiar with that movie. No.
There's a part that kind of references something you talked about in the book where he goes to relieve himself in the morning and his toilet does a readout of his urine. And then when he goes later on to buy some food, he's denied that because his sodium levels were already too high. And there were certain foods he wanted and he was told, no, you can't have that. And I thought that was a really interesting way of sort of nuancing what we're talking about, because that, too, if Big Brother is so interested in, say, the kinds of foods that we're selling in school lunch programs and other things where they're trying to control diet through legislation, wouldn't that be a natural extension of the nanny state?
You are so right about that, Ian. You are so right.
Have you ever heard of, I mean, is that something that you think of as being a possibility, controlling what we could buy?
Absolutely. You know, if you have one of these RFID tags in your loyalty card, you go into the store, and let's say they make you have one, which wouldn't be so out of the question, they could, when you're in the store, determine what you're picking up off the shelf and say, can't get that. You've got, diabetes, or no sir, you know, you need to lose about 5 pounds.
Right, and they could use the argument that we don't want to get sued. You know, if you bought that item and you are already somebody who consumes a lot of wine, we could get sued, so we can't let you buy that.
Well, you know, the other thing, it could be used to keep certain people from buying things, even if it wouldn't be harmful to them. I mean, if you look back at Nazi Germany, what was one of the things they did? They told the Jews that they couldn't buy certain foods that other groups were allowed to purchase.
Well, I just the idea of once insurance companies get involved with things, I mean, they have their agenda, too, and it just kind of changes the dynamics. How about the movie State of the Union? Did you ever see that with Will Smith and Gene Hackman?
I did see that, yeah.
When I saw that movie, I remember reading a review at the time that said, this technology isn't available yet. This is, the things that are spoken of in this movie aren't possible yet. How much of what is in that movie, State of the Union, is possible with RFID tags?
Well, based on what we've seen in the patent documentation, an awful lot of it. And now, is it being used? Probably only in the spy agencies at this point, and they're not going to be telling us about it, right?
Exactly. Let's go wildcard line. Ed is hanging on Coast to Coast AM for Catherine and Liz of Spy Chips. Ed?
Hello, I'm Ed from California. And I'm offering an answer to a bunch of questions about how do we defend against this thing.
How do we defend against it, Ed?
Well, all these RFID schemes have a critical flaw in them, and electronics geniuses, some people have called me one of, will exploit these and render RFID mostly useless. So,
okay, so we call upon Ed when the time comes, and Ed will be there, and I appreciate that.
Well, here's the problem, Ed. Let's say that I disable all the tags on my person, and I'm spotted by a video camera walking through a doorway, and there's nothing, no products appear, no name appears. The federal agents are going to swoop down on me quicker, or so fast it would make your head spin, because the whole plan here is that ultimately everything and everyone will be trackable, and anyone that isn't is going to be immediately suspect. So even killing the tags is not going to protect you. What we think is a far more effective solution is stopping it from getting out there in the first place. We've already done this with boycotts. We are planning protests. As we said, we've got one on the 15th in Dallas, Texas. We'd love to hear from everybody. Go to our spychips.com website if you're in the Dallas area or even around there and willing to drive to Dallas on Saturday the 15th. And also those of you in other places, Ed, you're in California. There's legislation pending right now in California that would make it a crime for the government to slip RFID tags into identity documents and other government documents. This is crucial legislation, yet nobody knows it's there. We need people in California to organize protests and organize awareness events so people find out about this. That's really the key. I think people need to roll up their sleeves and get involved and not wait for legislators to do this, but really just take our own, take matters into our own hands and start getting the awareness out. And that's really the key. People have to know what's happening so they can fight back.
Jill has probably our last question on the wildcard line for Catherine and Liz of Spy Chips. Go ahead, Jill.
Yes, I had a question about with regard to the readers and actual devices. The devices are giving off radio frequencies, and the readers, I think in the last show you said something about microwave. What kind of, if we have things in our home or on our person, our underwear, our passports, what sort of radiation and what kind of dangers are from either the readers or the chips themselves?
Great question.
Excellent point. In those confidential documents, by the way, we found that 60% of people were concerned about the health effects of this, but you're not alone. The concern here is that the reader devices, in order to read these tags, are sending out regular pulses of electromagnetic energy. This is the same kind of energy in the 915 megahertz range in many cases, that the European Union recently did a study and found it disrupts chromosomes. And, in fact, it destroys genetic material in a way that's permanent, meaning that not only does it disrupt your chromosomes, but when the cell replicates, that destruction or that break in the chromosome sequence is actually passed on to subsequent cells. So we're talking about permanent genetic damage as a result to being bombarded with these things.
And you can't do it. You can't do a 30-year study unless you've had these around for 30 years. So.
That's the problem. And, you know, they plan these reader devices to be bombarding us with this in floors, in doorways, in walls, even in picture frames, as we detail in the book Spy Chips. So, these things are going to be all around us unless we stop it.
Well, and unless we stop them, that's the call to us here, the call to action from Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre. Buy the book, read the book, talk about the book. I am not one ordinarily to ever think about putting on a foil hat, but I feel like putting a foil hat on my Mr. Coffee after reading this book. And think about what you could do in Dallas or in California or where you live. In the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do too.